This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Democrat Jen McMillan is running for the state House seat being vacated by Bill Mitchell.
I'm committed to making sure that we have a fair tax model, but I want to be very clear on one thing. I will not be voting for any tax increase on our lower or middle income families.
McMillan also says she needs to hear more about the tax brackets proposed by J.B. Pritzker before she signs on. Ryan Denham also reports it's McMillan's first run for office. Plus, John Norton talks with controversial cartoonist Keith Knight, and Terry Ryburn tells us what it's like being Zorro from a recent Next to Normal story slam. All that and a GLT News update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Thanks for choosing this GLT podcast. While it's free to you, it's not free to produce. Take a moment and make a contribution to help pay for this program. Go to WGLT.org, and thanks.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The two Illinois House districts that cover Bloomington Normal are getting lots of attention this election year. It's the first time incumbent Republicans Dan Brady and Keith Sommer have faced general election opponents in years. There is a third House district in McLean County as well, and there's no incumbent protecting it. It's the 101st House district, and it includes communities like Hayworth, Leroy, Downs, Arrowsmith, and Saybrook. State Representative Bill Mitchell is not seeking re-election in the 101st, opening it up for a race between Republican Dan Calkins and Democrat Jen McMillan, both from Decatur. Last week, you heard from Calkins, and today, GLT's Ryan Denham talks with McMillan, one of many Democratic women making her first run for office.
Before this campaign, never knocked on a door and never made a phone call to a candidate. I work at Lincoln College, and I have a 4-year-old and a 15-year-old stepson. And I've been kind of worried about the state of Illinois for several years. I graduated from the U of I in Springfield with my master's in public administration, and just kind of worried about the route that we were taking, especially with our budget. But about this time last year, when we finally got a budget passed, I had to tell a couple of students that, unfortunately, because of the budget situation, we weren't going to have MAP funding available for our students at Lincoln College. And some of those students had to either take out more loans or they had to drop out of school. And for me, that was unacceptable, that the state that I lived in should be counted on to fulfill their end of the bargain for our students and our families. So the only way that I can ensure that that never happens again is if I am in Springfield making those decisions.
What would be some of the top issues that you focused on if you were to become elected? It sounds like higher education funding might be one of them.
It is. So I've worked education adjacent my entire career. Like I said, I have a master's in public admin, but I've worked in the nonprofit and education sector for a very long time. And in my district, not only is it the impact of education and making sure it's funded, but it's also taking into consideration all of the other items in the 101st district. We're a very rural district for the most part. So one of the things that I'm going to be debuting next Wednesday night, I've got an event in DeWitt County. We're going to talk about the small town square and the importance of rebuilding the smaller towns around Decatur and Bloomington that can really better the lives of people that live there. So we're going to talk a little bit about infrastructure, about business development, and what it means to be a family that lives in Hayworth or DeLand or Weldon in today's society.
Back on August 27th, you had tweeted that, as a mom and education professional, I see the harm our representatives have caused to families and business owners. So what do you mean by that? What harm?
For me, it's probably the uncertainty that we deal with in Illinois from day to day. You know, we have a lot of people that say businesses are leaving, people are leaving just because of the taxes. And I think that it's a much more complex problem than that. I think it's the instability of not knowing if you're going to have a budget that year, if your business that you work for is going to staff you with enough hours, if we're going to have health care that you can afford and pay for. So I think there's all of these instabilities that are built in, and it's an outcome of all these different decisions, some of them made in Springfield, some of them made in Washington. And I think that if we stabilize that, if we can get our spending under control here in Springfield, if we can find new revenue sources and make sure that people have faith that our government's going to work, that I think they'll stick around.
The Democrat who's running for governor, J.B. Pritzker, has announced support for a progressive or graduated income tax. Mm-hmm. The Republican incumbent, Bruce Reiner, opposes that. What do you think of that idea of moving to a progressive, graduated, what Pritzker calls a fair income tax?
Sure. I'm supportive of the fair income tax model, although I want to know more about the rates that Mr. Pritzker is proposing, as I'm sure a lot of people do. I'm committed to making sure that we have a fair tax model, but I want to be very clear on one thing. I will not be voting for any tax increase on our lower or middle income families. That is one area. We've already been hit very hard in the state of Illinois with property taxes, and we need to be very mindful that our tax system has been very regressive. Just because it is a flat tax. We need to be competitive. We need to look to all the states around us that have a fair tax model and see what works best and what models we can learn from and implement here in the state of Illinois.
You've said that you are committed to putting Illinois on the path to universal pre-K for 3 and 4 year olds, as
yes.
well as expanding access to the child care assistance program. Specifically related to pre-K, how would you do that and how would you pay for that?
That is a wonderful question and something that I'm very passionate about. I just talked to an organization the other night about this very issue. When I was at the Education Coalition of Macon County, we worked primarily with improving the educational outcomes of Macon County. And we came down to the realization that it really does all start between 0 and 5. And it was an aspect that we as a county, we as a state, and a nation are just not addressing. We have the research to know that it's very important to get students started on the right foot before kindergarten. And now we need to go ahead and make that a priority and fund that. Now, I know that we are currently dealing with some very serious budget issues, and we are going to have to go and fight for the priorities that we really think will improve the state both economically and educationally. And I think that with utilizing a fair tax model, with looking at other sources of new revenue, and as well as cutting, we need to look for some more efficiencies and make sure that we're best utilizing tax dollars all around to find some dollars to put towards universal pre-K.
So the 101st House District is an open seat because Republican incumbent Bill Mitchell is not seeking re-election.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in office since 1999.
Yeah.
So what did you think of Mitchell's tenure?
I unfortunately didn't have a lot of interaction with Representative Mitchell. We had him in the Education Coalition of Macon County a couple times during the education funding bill, just to speak to those issues. But from what I understand after talking with people in the district is, it's kind of a mixed bag is what you'd expect with somebody that's been in office for 20 years. He has gotten a lot of things done for our district, and there are issues that he and I just don't agree on, and it goes the same way with other people in the district, that it sounds like he has done what he needed to do, and we'd like to have some fresh ideas as we move forward.
This is GLT's Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. I'm here with Jen McMillan, a Democratic candidate for state and representative in the 101st House District. That district includes parts of McLean County, communities like Hayworth, Leroy Downs, Arrowsmith, Saybrook. The bulk of the population of that district, though, is in Macon County. So this district, Jen, is considered a Republican-leaning district. Mitchell has kept it red for a while. His last Democratic opponent was in 2016, but she didn't really run a full campaign. Mm-hmm. I know you get asked this question a lot, but how do you, a Democrat, win in this district?
That is a wonderful question, and I'm so happy to be running in the 101st because it is a perfectly situated district for me personally. I grew up as a farm kid. I'm a proud graduate of the Southwestern FFA chapter, and I was one of those farm nerds that I was very excited when the industrial hemp bill passed. That was my speech topic in high school. So for me, I grew up, we never voted for a party, and we always voted for the person. And that's what I remind voters is that I I really just want you to vote. If you think that I'm the best candidate, I hope that you vote for me. But I want you to vote for somebody that you know is going to go fight in Springfield for you and that has the experience to work collaboratively with both sides of the aisle. So I've been out talking to everyone that will listen, from retired teachers all the way down to some lovely 17-year-olds on college campuses, and just talking to them about the issues that matter to them. And the vast majority of the people in my district, they're mad at both parties. And they're just thankful to hear from a politician that, you know, I tell them how it is and what I believe and listen to what they believe.
Well, you described yourself as a farm nerd. Growing up in a pretty rural part of Illinois. Why are you a Democrat?
I'm a Democrat because this is the party that has always stood up for working families. You know, I am the daughter of a Teamster and a registered nurse. And the only way that I was able to go to college, that I was able to have a really great life, is for the start that I got thanks to the union that my dad was in and the safeguards that my mom had in her job. And I credit a lot of that to the policies created by Democrats. And I think that for me, it all goes back to, I want to know that I'm fighting for the very best future possible. And, you know, as a Democrat, I'm proud to support environmental issues. I'm proud to go out and fight for our unions. As someone that's been endorsed by the AFL-CIO and the Illinois Federation of Teachers, I know that when I go out, I'm fighting for those people, and they appreciate it. And it's just, that's a long way of saying, I just want to know that I've got my feet grounded with people that are working every day in our district.
So in the same way that the Democrats are trying to paint Republicans into a corner with their support of President Trump, and we've seen that with congressional candidates, mm-hmm. Republicans are sort of doing the same to Democrats with Speaker Mike Madigan.
Yes.
You've been critical of Madigan. You called for him to step down as party chairman back on February 21st. That was pretty early when his handling of sexual misconduct within the party was coming mm-hmm. under fire. So how much distance would there be between Representative McMillan and Speaker Madigan?
So I would like to thank you for reminding people. That was a very difficult decision when I asked Speaker Madigan to step down as leader of the party. And I did it for a variety of reasons, but the real push was that day that came out in relation to his staff. For me, I am determined to go in there and fight for my district. I'm willing to do that with whoever is Speaker of the House, be that Mr. Madigan, or if there is another highly qualified person that comes in, that I am able to help them in that role. For me, we just need to make sure that we've got someone in the 101st that is willing to fight for the district. And there's actually something that I heard during the budget impasse that really stuck with me, that downstate, it feels like sometimes we're in the mushroom caucus. We're kept in the dark and fed some very nice, not nice things. And that's the one thing that we have to fight against, is that my voice as the next representative in the 101st district means just as much as Speaker Madigan's voice in that chamber. And we need to hold whoever the Speaker of the House is account to make sure that our voices are heard every time.
So I read that you decided to run on the day that Lisa Madigan and Barbara Flynn Curry, two big women in Illinois politics, announced that they were stepping down.
Yes.
Is that true?
It is. And actually, I don't think we've reached a year yet, because it was right before the Clinton Apple and Pork Festival. That was the first event that I went to as a candidate last year. And I had been debating about running for a very long time. I'd gone to a couple of trainings with the Illinois Democratic County Chairs Association because I didn't know anything about politics at that point. So I was hemming and hawing if I really wanted to put my family through this. And that day, I remember it very clearly. I heard the news that the both of them were not going to run for re-election. And I thought to myself that it's a travesty that we don't have more women from downstate running. We don't have more families represented in Springfield. And I finally that day decided, you know what, win or lose, we need to have that voice. So I jumped in the race, and I was actually very thankful. I've not been able to speak to Lisa Madigan yet, but I was able to tell Curry, Ms. Curry, that story and thank her for her service. It's been a couple months ago at a Democratic Women's event, but just to be able to tell her, you know, you are the reason that I'm running. It meant a great deal to the both of us to know that while she's retiring, she's leaving a legacy of very strong women that want to fight for their districts as well.
That's Jen McMillan, a Democratic candidate for state representative in the 101st House District. That district includes parts of McLean County and communities like Hayworth, Leroy, Downs, Arrowsmith, and Saybrook. I'm Ryan Denham.
McMillan will face Republican Dan Calkins on November 6th in the 101st House District. You can hear last week's interview with Calkins right now at WGLT.org. We are just hours away from ending this fund drive. It comes to a close later today. Your contribution in any amount right now will help reach the goal and pay for the programs you depend on, including Sound Ideas. Don't put it off any longer. Whatever you can give makes a real difference. Contribute online at WGLT.org.
Support for GLT comes from Heartland Community College, hosting its Drones in the Heartland Conference November 9th. Enthusiasts, professionals, and the curious can enjoy presentations by national and local experts. Early bird registration ends October 12th. Conference details and other classes at heartland.edu/drone. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Coming up, John Norton chats with an award-winning yet controversial cartoonist. For nearly 20 years, Jesse White has held the position of Illinois Secretary of State, which means he has consistently secured an important office for the Democratic Party. This campaign, Republicans are hoping to derail White's reelection by focusing on his age and time in office. For this week's Illinois Issues, Daisy Contreras speaks with Jacqueline Driscoll about the race for Secretary of State.
Illinois Secretary of State Jesse White has held the elected office nearly two decades. This year, his Republican opponent is questioning whether White will be able to serve out another four-year term if elected. Jacqueline Driscoll joins me, Daisy Contreras, to break down this race and the candidates' platforms. Now, Jacqueline, for those who don't know, what is the Secretary of State in Illinois responsible for?
The Secretary of State has a lot more responsibilities than some might think. The most notable one is the state's vehicle registration and driver licensing authority, but they also keep state records, laws, they're in charge of the state library and archives.
And who are the candidates that are still standing just a couple weeks away from the general election?
We have Democratic incumbent Jesse White. He is an 84-year-old originally from Alton. He was first elected to the office of Secretary of State in 1998. And then we have a Republican candidate, Jason Helen. He's a 42-year-old who resides in Mizzen, Illinois, and he is currently the Grundy County State's Attorney. And last, a Libertarian candidate, that is Steve Duttner. He's 41 years old. He is from Elgin, and he says he has been active in politics for roughly half his life.
And as you've been following this race, Jacqueline, there have been some issues around the Secretary of State race. What have been the biggest issues so far?
The biggest issue so far is definitely White's age. Republican candidate Jason Helen has really been hitting White very hard on his age and questioning whether he is really going to be able to serve out another four-year term. So let's take a quick listen to what Helen said when asked if it was appropriate that he was being critical of White's age.
I think it's totally appropriate in this case. The Secretary of State just doesn't have the stamina to last until 2023. I think it's clear that he's wanted to retire since 2009. And if somebody wanted to retire my office 10 years ago, I would have shown them the door.
That was Republican candidate for Secretary of State Jason Helland. And now we hear from the Libertarian candidate Steve Duttner.
I think that the problem is more with like term limits because he's approaching 20 years. So I think it's very offensive and disrespectful when my Republican opponent goes after Mr. White for his age.
For the most part, Duttner has been fairly complimentary of White's tenure in the position, although he does say that he believes the Secretary of State office is, quote, a stagnant one within the past 8 years, meaning that White hasn't really accomplished anything new. As we heard, he thinks this is more of an issue about term limits. And of course, we need to hear from the current Secretary of State, Jesse White, because this whole issue is about his age. So here's what he has to say about that.
I told Mr. Holland and my Libertarian opponent that I'm in better shape than both of them.
And Jacqueline, White has also been called out over the automatic voter registration. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that is?
Definitely. So that is pretty recent. White has been called out for failing to implement the automatic voter registration program, which is essentially designed to streamline the registration process. Legislation was signed into law in 2017, and that required it to be up and running by July 1st of 2018. Some are saying only portions of that law have been implemented. In response, White's office says that this is not true. They say the program is up and running and, quote, going very well.
And do you think that White's long tenure has helped or hindered the Democratic Party in Illinois?
Well, it can be seen as both a blessing and a curse, really. If you look at the history of the Office of Secretary of State, it's been used as a stepping stone to higher office, but White staying put in this position has really limited opportunities for other Democrats to build that similar name recognition that White does have throughout the state. But he's also secured a very important office for the Democratic Party since the late 1990s. And he has consistently been the highest statewide vote getter in election after election. However, this particular campaign season, the Republican Party is really hitting home this idea, this concept of career politicians, and that can definitely be seen as a negative for Jesse White in this race.
Thank you, Jacqueline.
All right, thank you, Daisy.
That was Daisy Contreras speaking with Jacqueline Driscoll about the 2018 race for Illinois Secretary of State.
Journalists across the country cover local news. I'm Jeremy Hobson, and local journalism means going into your neighborhoods, schools, and barbershops to talk to you. When you link all those stories together, you get a vivid picture of our country, its people, and the challenges we face. You can hear the bigger picture when you listen to NPR. And when you give each month, you help support local stories that unite our country. Keep the stories that connect our country coming. Become a sustaining member now.
Please contribute now at WGLT.org.
Lots of people like to wait for the last minute to act on something. There's a thrill to getting in just under the wire. If that sounds familiar to you, we have good news. The Fall Fund Drive ends today. This is your last chance to help pay for Sound Ideas and all the other GLT and NPR programs you depend on. No more waiting for that last thrilling moment. It's here. Contribute at WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Coming up, a story with a theme of change. Award-winning cartoonist Keith Knight focuses on racial profiling, police brutality, and race relations in some of his cartoons. That has many pegging him as a social activist. Knight draws and narrates three different platforms. His K Chronicles is a weekly multi-panel. He has a weekly single panel called Think, and The Nightlife is his daily comic strip, and one he says is his most personal, based on his family. Knight will hold a community event at Illinois Wesleyan University tonight in the Hanson Student Center. He tells GLT's John Norton via Skype, the majority of his sketches have become overly political as he's learned that if he doesn't tell his own story and the story of oppressed people, others will tell it.
And they'll get it wrong. You know, I was raised on seeing images of people that look like me in a certain way and realizing that, you know, the people putting out those images don't have my best interest in mind. You know, I was a hip hop fan growing up, and every time I heard someone talk about hip hop fans, that they were gang members, that they were this, they were that. And I was like, wow, that doesn't reflect any of my friends and family who are fans of hip hop, but also are fans of other music, who are politically aware, who are smart, who have not been to jail, and all that, those type of things. And I knew that reflected most of the people that are out there. And so it was important for me to create this stuff. In many ways, now that I have kids, I see that what I'm creating is hopefully an archive for them to look back on and hopefully learn some of the stuff that I learned at an older age. Hopefully they'll learn.
What you're saying makes me think of a couple of things, two different thoughts along the same line. Number one, I want to go back to your perception of yourself, or at least how you feel black people were portrayed when you were growing up. I can't tell you how many black, especially males, tell me that when they were growing up, they just knew they were going to be an athlete, they were going to be a musician, or they were going to be in prison. I'm wondering if a lot of white people really don't understand the message that comes across in the media and probably in real life as well, and how it affects probably especially young black males.
Well, it affects everybody, just everybody different ways. But yeah, if people listening right now just take a mild peruse through your either Facebook feed or just through online, if you're looking for any sort of information online, and count the number of mugshot photos of black males that you see. I've actually gone to my local news station, to their office, and just said, like, why do you always post all these? And they're people that just get arrested. They're not guilty of anything, but they got arrested. But just constant mugshots of black and brown people. And I said, like, you're creating this image for every one of these that you show. You should have 4 or 5 images of black and brown people doing something else, which, of course, they don't. They don't have those images. And it's like, oh, well, you know, that's what the police send us. And I see that they also send like generic, there's like generic police car photos and stuff that they post when they don't have any mugshots. And I said, you should be posting more of those and less of these mugshots, because people don't read this stuff. They just sort of casually see this stuff, and it just embeds into their heads.
What kind of feedback do you get from these media outlets when you express those ideas to them?
Well, this guy said, well, you know, if people just came and like came to work for us and did this, you know, so what I've been doing is sending this guy. I said, I can't work for you. You know, I've got plenty of stuff that I have to do, but I will send you information about people of color doing things in this area that are not just, you know, suspects or whatever. So I constantly send him, you know, stuff about businesses and folks who own restaurants and artists. I live in the Research Triangle of North Carolina. So there are 2 great universities here, UNC and Duke, and there's so much stuff going on here. Basically, what it is, you know, these places are understaffed and they're just doing the easy stuff. They're doing the lazy stuff. And I guess what I'm trying to do with my slideshow and with my presentations is to get people to understand that it's easy to be racist. It's easy to be sexist. It's easy not to pick up trash on the ground. You know, what I'm asking people to do is the stuff that's a little bit harder to go above and beyond. And because we have to change, we have to do the right thing. And sometimes the right thing isn't as easy.
Keith, if I may dive in here, this gets exactly where I was going to next. Keith Knight is our guest, cartoonist, activist. When you want to display this to people and get this message across, who are you actually trying to get this message to in our world? As we even seen this week with the Kavanaugh hearings, as we're speaking, the FBI is currently doing this investigation, right? And whoever saw that Kavanaugh hearing with Professor Ford, you're either on one side or the other. Neither side can see the other person's side, it appears, except for maybe Jeff Flake, all right? So if you're giving this to an audience, are they so embedded in how they feel that you're not even going to reach them anyway? And are you trying to reach that audience?
Well, I'm trying to reach everybody, because I think everybody has different degrees of being woken up to it. And I just know this, even the most staunch, you know, if you call people out on their stuff, Kavanaugh will probably get confirmed and it will seem like it's for naught. But so many people, I think, have been enlightened to the amount of privilege that someone like him has, and the amount of victims that don't speak out, that experience all this stuff. There's no way that this country has not been affected in a way that is hopefully gonna help change, even if it's a tiny bit. I speak about this in my presentation. Someone wrote to me via Facebook. It was someone I went to school with 30 years ago. And she said, Keith, hey, like, I don't know if you remember me, but we went to school together and we were in the dorm or something. And I said a joke that you called me out on and said, let me explain to you why that's offensive. And she said it stuck with her. And she started calling her family members out on some of these jokes, these racist jokes that were said. And she said, like, this thing now, like, now she's got kids and her kids hang out with all these diverse different kids and blah, blah, blah. And she just said, like, that time that you called me out was life-changing to me. And I don't remember it at all.
I don't. Okay.
But just that little thing, I think if everybody stepped up and called people out on their stuff, like, they would think twice.
You referenced Donald Trump earlier in our conversation. Did his election a couple of years ago alter, change your work at all?
Not really. I mean, he's just a symptom of a much larger issue. And if you know anything about the history of this country and race, you would know that he was coming after the first black president. It's a pushback. It happened after Reconstruction. It happened after the Civil Rights Movement. It's happening after the first black president. It's this pushback by the white majority saying, you didn't get as much as you think you got, you know?
Keith Knight is the voice you're hearing. He's a cartoonist and activist at Illinois Wesleyan on Monday, October 8th. I want to reference one other K Chronicle where you told the story of picking up an award, I think it was in Boston, and the police chief in your hometown came up to you and said he wanted to work with you on police community relations. Is that a true story?
That is a true story.
Really?
And I tell you, that police chief he's amazing.
What town is that, Keith?
It's Malden, Massachusetts. That's okay. Where I grew up.
Okay.
And Malden is famous for Congress All-Stars were invented there. And just he came up and just said, like, you know, I just really like the work that you do. And it would be great to work together on something. You know, I said to him that it would be great. What I want to do is something that is not in the media. I would like to present in front of cops, rookie cops, but we haven't set anything up yet. But when I do it, no one's going to know about it, because the one thing I don't like is sort of the hype that people get. You know, it's sort of like, oh, look, the police are working with the community and everything. I'd rather we do the work on the down low, and then we see the results in just the way they police.
Keith Knight, the cartoonist, our guest on GLT Sound Ideas. I've asked you a lot about political stuff, a lot about police and race relations. Let's talk about the art form itself. You referenced Peanuts earlier in our conversation. Who were some of the artists, the cartoonists that maybe influenced you, got your attention, that you sort of followed in their footsteps a bit?
So, you know, Peanuts was a big influence. Doonesbury was a huge influence. Just the fact that he mixed in politics with fiction and different things like that. So that was huge for me. You know, Maury Turner was a big influence, and especially meeting him later in life before he passed. I got to interview him at the San Diego Comic-Con, and just some of his early work totally reminds me of just the stuff that I'm doing. I'm like, oh my God, like I'm doing what he did, you know, 50 years ago, but he did it much better than I did. And I just remember reading, knowing that newspapers didn't just have comics on the comics page, they had them on the editorial page. And they had them in the classifieds and in the sports section. Like, that's what really got me into just reading the whole newspaper and just taking in everything. And so that's why I do what I do today. I think that's why I'm all over the place doing editorial cartoons and alternative weeklies and dailies, you know, so much stuff that I took in.
Cartoonist and social activist Keith Knight speaking via Skype with GLT's John Norton. You can see samples of Knight's work right now at WGLT.org. Knight will hold a community event at Illinois Wesleyan University this evening at 7 in the Hanson Student Center. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. As we change the season, we say goodbye to the lushness of summer. It fades with the daylight, yet that sadness comes mixed with the crispness of the new air, the excitement of the start of school. Change is the theme of the latest Next to Normal Story Slam, held recently at the McLean County Arts Center and produced by Devin Lovell. Terry Ryburn rubs up against change in the form of moving to a new city and welcoming a new sibling, but most of all, it's about being Zorro.
doesn't love that music, Zorro? First of all, I want to say I'm telling a story tonight about my brothers and myself, and my brothers are not here to defend themselves, so it's their bad luck, right? I will say that I love my brothers now. In 1953, I was 5 and a half. Isn't it funny when you're 5 that you feel the need to add that and a half to let people know that you're almost to the next number? Not so much when you're 70 and a half. We had moved from Bloomington, Illinois to San Francisco, California in a pickup truck. In the front of the truck were my mom and dad and my baby brother, Roger. And in the back of the truck, I rode with my 3 older brothers, Junior, Dave, and Vic. Oh, and we had my dad's coon hunting dog, Span, in the back with us. As soon as we got to California, my mother's new doctor ordered her to bed to avoid a miscarriage. So my brothers and I had the run of San Francisco. We wandered uphill and downhill. We covered every street and the waterfront, and we only came home to eat and sleep. Now, we didn't live in a real nice neighborhood, but about, oh, I don't know, maybe 10 blocks away, there was a Salvation Army Red Shield Club where they showed a movie one night a week. Well, my brothers never wanted to take me to the movie. Well, number one, I was their sister. They didn't want me tagging along. But number two, even then, there was gang activity in San Francisco. So my mother said to them, "You take her or you're not going." So they had to take me. The night of the movie, my brother Vic came to me and handed me a rusty pocket knife with a broken blade. And he said, "Use it if you have to." Without explaining what situation would require that I use this pocket knife. But I was one of the boys. I nodded and, "Yes, yes." And I folded it up and I put it in my pocket. My oldest brother, Junior, said, "If something goes down, you run for home." I presumed someone would tell me when something was going down. So I skipped along behind my brothers and their friends on the way to the Red Shield Club, and we sat on cold metal folding chairs waiting for the movie. And the room went dark, and then on the screen there was Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd. And of course, Bugs Bunny was taunting Elmer Fudd, and Elmer Fudd was trying to chase Bugs Bunny. And we laughed, and we rocked in our chairs, and we applauded, and my brothers whistled. I never could, but they did. And then the screen went dark when Porky Pig said, "That's all, folks." But then it began. The music. The screen. Credits. And suddenly, there he was on the screen. Spanish gentleman, Don Diego Vega. Oh, he was beautiful. Absolutely, you know what I'm talking about if you've seen the movie. But there he was, sword fighting and jumping this beautiful black horse over stanchions and wagering with the other caballeros. Now, Don Diego was not the dandy that he appeared to be. By day, he was this listless, bored California caballero. But by night, he was Zorro, a solitary figure riding hell for leather across a darkened countryside, his mask hiding his true identity, his cape flying in the wind. He rode to avenge the helpless, to punish the evil politicians, and to aid the oppressed. His sword flashed across the screen, zip, 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 and he carved Z's into everything, handbills and walls, and even the chests of the bad guys. Oh, we yelled and applauded, and again, my brothers whistled all throughout this thing. And finally, I mean, he's fighting the bad guys, and he's sword fighting with Captain Pasquale. And they're fighting, you know, up the stairs with the swords, and then down the stairs with the swords, and back up again. Oh, it was so exciting. And by the time the end credits rolled, he had overthrown the corrupt government, and he had alleviated the suffering of his people. The lights came on, and we blinked our way to the door and stepped out into the darkened night. And I noticed my brothers checking their pockets for their pocket knives, and their friends checking their pockets for their pocket knives. So I patted my pocket. Yep, I had my blade. We walked in silence for a couple of blocks, and suddenly my brother Junior yelled, "Run!" I took off running hell for leather for home. The only thing my brother saw of me were my elbows and my shoe soles. My brother's friend yelled, "Where's your sister?" And Junior yelled back, "Up there." I ran up the stairs. "Mama, mama," I pounded on the door. "Mama, mama." She jerked open the door and we clattered past her into the house. And she said, "What on earth are you kids up to?" Well, that night, I tumbled into bed, dreaming of a solitary figure riding hell for leather across a darkened countryside, my mask disguising my true identity, and my cape flying in the wind. The next day, my brothers decided to start their own Zorro club, unauthorized, of course, and they tore up one of Daddy's old shirts and made masks for themselves, and they got a couple of towels and pinned them with diaper pins for their capes. I couldn't have a mask or a towel because I hadn't been initiated into the club. My brothers had reserved the role of Zorro for themselves. And if I wanted to play, I had to be either Don Diego's girlfriend Lolita, Sergeant Gonzalez, or Captain Pasquale, because none of them wore masks. Well, I didn't want to be any of those people, especially not that silly, helpless Lolita. But if I wanted to play, that's what I had to do. My brother Dave went back upstairs and climbed up on the windowsill and tore down Mom's curtains and left the curtains puddled on the floor so we could have the curtain rods as swords. And they were the perfect length. And you know, if you practiced enough, you could get them to make that Zorro Z sound. Zip, zip, zip. So there we were on the front porch, and we started fighting, and we fought up the stairs, and then we fought down the stairs, and we fought back up the stairs. Finally, we were on the second floor landing. We jumped up on the porch railing. We were still fighting, but we began to throw out Spanish insults at each other. Now, given that we'd only seen the one movie, that was a rather limited vocabulary. But, you know, we yelled things like, "Take that, you caballero dog," and "Prepare to die, you peon bandito." So we jumped down onto a fence, and we jumped from rooftop to rooftop. That's not a new sport, people. We invented that. So we shouted Spanish curses at each other. And again, we had a limited vocabulary. But we yelled, "Madre de Dios" and "Santa Maria." We rappelled down a rope only loosely tied to the second story railing and ended up on the front porch. Well, I wiped my knees because I was always dirty, and I had permanently skinned knees from hanging out with my brothers. And I said, "Can I be in the Zorro Club?" Dave looked at Vic, and Vic looked at Dave. Dave said, "If you pass the initiation." Well, it started easy enough. Vic pointed to the stairs. 1, 2, 3. Jump. I jumped. He pointed one more stair. I jumped. Then he pointed 3 more stairs above that. And I jumped. And I landed in this bone-rattling crunch. And I stood up and I said, "Am I in the club?" And Dave said, "Well, there's one more initiation." I followed my brothers upstairs and through our flat. We tiptoed through the flat so we didn't wake up Mom and Roger, the baby. Followed them out to the back porch. There was a clothesline on a pulley that was attached to our house and the house behind us. Dave said, "You have to get on that, and we're going to wheel you to the other house and back." I looked over the railing. It was a long way down to the concrete backyard. "Do you want to be in the Zorro Club or not?" I climbed quickly over that railing and grabbed onto the clothesline, and my brothers started wheeling me out. Well, I was a little heavier than my mom's wet clothes that she hung up. Not much, mind you, but a little. And so it kind of drooped, but even at that, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a good idea maybe to be dropping onto the concrete. So I started doing this hand-to-hand maneuver to get back to the porch, and my brothers were laughing. And if I got anywhere close, they would wheel me out again. They thought they were so funny. So finally I started crying because the rope was digging into my hand. I tried one more time this hand-over-hand maneuver, and I got close. I started trying to kick my leg for the railing, trying to hook onto something. And finally, my brothers hauled me over the railing where I stood with my scraped shins, and I said, crying, am I in the club? My brother looks at me. There's one more initiation. So I followed my brothers back through the flat, and Mama yelled, you kids get outside, you'll wake the baby. We went downstairs, where there was an old mattress on the curb. And my brothers pulled it off the curb and onto the sidewalk, and Dave said, you have to get on that, and we're going to roll it up until we say you can get out. How long? Vic said, till we say. And then I'm in the club, right? Dave looked at Vic, and Vic looked at Dave. Yeah, yeah, Dave said. So I stretched out on the mattress. And my brothers rolled it up, and they sat on it. And it smelled terrible. And I couldn't breathe. And then they started to bounce up and down on it. And I really couldn't breathe. And I started crying and yelling, but my voice was muffled by the mattress. Finally, I heard this faraway voice saying, have you boys got a cat in that mattress? No, Mama, Vic said. No, Mama, Dave echoed. What have you got in there? Nothing, Vic said. Nothing, Dave echoed. Get up off that mattress right now. So my brother stood up, and the mattress flopped open, and there I lay, blue in the face and gulping for air. And my mother shouted down from the porch, how in the world did you get in there? So she told the boys, you take that nasty mattress back over there to the curb and get on up in here. So I rolled off the mattress, and they dragged it over to the curb, and I stood up, and my knees were all wobbly, and when they came back over to where I was, I croaked. I said, am I in the club? Dave looked at Vic, and Vic looked at Dave, and Dave said, if you get a mask and a cape. So I ran upstairs. I kind of dragged myself upstairs to Mama. I said, Mama, I need a mask and a cape. And she said, I don't know why you want to be in that old club anyway. As if I needed further proof that grown-ups didn't understand what was really important in life. So I begged her, please, Mama, please. So she took another old shirt of Daddy's, and she cut it up, and she cut eye holes in it, and she cut a nose hole. And then she found another towel and a diaper pin. So I had my mask and my cape. But finally, I was a full-fledged member of the Zorro Club. So I ran downstairs to my brothers, and they looked at me and laughed. What? Nobody's going to believe you're Zorro. You've got a nose hole in your mask. We can see your freckles. And I thought a minute, and I went back up to Mama. I said, Mama, I need another mask. I'm not making you another mask. There's nothing wrong with that mask. You get back outside and play. So sadly, I walked back down the stairs, and I opened our dented old garbage can, and I put my mask and my cape and my curtain rod sword in the garbage. My brothers moved on to the Dick Tracy Club, acquiring Dick Tracy walkie-talkies and skulking around our apartment at night, long after Mom had fallen exhausted into bed. But I never endured another initiation. The truth is, I didn't want to be in the Zorro Club. I wanted to be Zorro. Still, sometimes I tumble into bed and dream of a solitary rider riding hell for leather across a darkened countryside, my mask hiding my true identity, my cape flying in the wind. Thank you.
Terry Ryburn telling her story about being Zorro in the recent Next to Normal Story Slam held at the McLean County Arts Center. Devin Lovell produces the series. The all-important GLT Fall Fund Drive ends today, and we are running short of goal. If we don't meet the goal, we won't have enough income to pay for the programs you depend on. If you've already contributed, thanks. But if you haven't contributed, you need to pitch in and help. Every contribution makes a big difference, including yours. Get it done now at WGLT.org. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, a service of Illinois State University School of Communication. Our website is where you can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories with help today from Devin Lovell, from Ryan Denham, and from John Norton. WGLT.org is the first place to go to subscribe to the Sound Ideas podcast. Also look at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or NPR One. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.